The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our humble bunker. Today is Sunday, October 12th of 2014.
And kind of a gray day here in the heartland, and in some ways, kind of a gray day in the news as well, as we kind of look at what's going on out there. Another confirmed Ebola infection. This would be the second person infected outside West Africa.
Yes. The nurse in Spain and now a nurse here in the United States in Dallas.
Yes. And the nurse in Dallas, as with the case in the nurse in Spain, was wearing protective gear. This is the one of the caregivers who was responsible for treating Thomas Eric Duncan, who was the first victim to fall, the first fatality in the United States confirmed to the Ebola outbreak that's been going on since last December.
That's correct. And, of course, he arrived here from Liberia. He came over here to ask Louise Trow to marry him. She's a Liberian who, as of now, along with her family and some other contacts, is incommunicado.
Yeah.
They have been taken to a safe house, supposedly, for quarantine. But I haven't seen any stories on them since they went.
Mm-hmm. So we were told that the outbreak would be confined, that it would be rare. The odds of it getting to these shores would be rare. And, of course, that happened even when Duncan told. Well, I don't know what he told the TSA officials when he landed at the airport. And I presume he landed at Dallas because that's where he was.
He did.
Fell sick. But we also have a story now from one of the World Health Organization workers who spent about, what was it, a month, 31 days over in Nigeria.
Yes.
And landed at Miami and told Transportation Safety Administration officials when she landed in Miami that she had just returned from Nigeria, where she'd spent a month. Nigeria is one of the nations that's been hard hit by the Ebola outbreak, and she was not stopped. She said, in her words, nobody noticed, nobody cared. And she came right into the country.
And that shocks me.
Yeah.
That shocks me. That is an international airport, and you would think that Miami would know better. What amazes me is it appears that no one's in command here in the United States, which I know is not true, but as far as the mainstream media is concerned, it's, what is it, Tom Frieden from the CDC,
mm-hmm.
the head of the CDC. He has been the point man, essentially, for the United States. And he was quoted earlier today as saying, watch, we're going to get more
mm-hmm.
Ebola outbreak in the United States. More patients will show up.
Yeah. We are now over 4,000 reported dead in West Africa, but those numbers we've been told are probably low.
Yeah.
The World Health Organization,
probably more like three times that.
Yeah, has said that because of the problem of collecting statistics in those nations, the numbers that we're being told are probably low. And interestingly, the most recent report released by the World Health Organization, which was Thursday or Friday of this week, put the dead count at 4,033. Now, knowing these are estimated numbers, why do they round to 33?
Yeah,
we've talked
I wondered
about
that before.
We won't beat that to death. But this is something that continues to spread. It's like a slow rolling train wreck.
I have my hand up, Mr. Gilbert.
Yes, Mrs. Gilbert.
I was just going to mention that if we're going to get into numbers, 4033 is 22. There's a hidden 22 and 4. But also, tomorrow is 1013.
Oh, yes. That's right.
If you're not up on it, 1013 of 1060. No, not 1066. It was, what was the exact date?
When Philip the Fair Yes, issued his edict and essentially...
I think the 500th anniversary was a few years ago.
When we were in Shelbyville, Indiana. Mm-hmm. In fact, it would have been 2000...
Nine?
No, no, seven. It was December of 07, so I think it was 1307.
I'll look that up.
Yeah, when Philip the Fair, the King of France, issued his decree that wiped out the Knights Templar. And it would have been the 700th anniversary.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it was Friday the 13th of 1307. Scores of French Templars were simultaneously arrested by agents of King Philip, later to be tortured. And so, yeah, in 2007, the 700th anniversary, there was a Masonic lodge in Shelbyville, Indiana, and the Knights Templar of Indiana also met there. Now, I don't know what the connection is between the Knights Templar in the United States today and the Knights Templar of the 14th century.
If it actually reaches all the way back without any break, or if they're simply, hey, cool, let's play like Knights Templar.
Right. But anyway, the Knights Templar in Indiana held an event there. And I'm kind of sorry we missed it, actually, because there's a gentleman that I interviewed on the air back in Columbia in 2007 who wrote Freemasonry for Dummies.
Oh.
And I'm going to have to look it up real quick. I think he still blogs at about Freemasonry. Nice guy. He's all in on board for freemasonryfordummies.blogspot.com. It's Christopher Hodapp. And nice guy. And I may have interviewed him about the history of the
Knights Templar. Well, it sounds familiar, yeah.
But we missed that because we got to Indiana just a little bit too late. We got there in early December, and they'd had the 700th anniversary celebration, of course, on October 13th of 2007.
We did. Anyway. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting because tomorrow, of course, 10-13. 10-13, you'll see those numbers over and over again. Of course, the X-Files famously used 10-13 as their production name.
Right, yeah. And just kind of a little bit of a nod and a wink. Now, the questions that come to mind, because I think any rational thinking person, knowing the lethality of Ebola and the fact that it's got a 3-week incubation period, which means people can be asymptomatic, not showing any symptoms.
Have no fever
and travel to another country, which apparently was the case with Thomas Eric Duncan, and then begin developing symptoms.
Exactly.
They're in the new place.
He was checked for a fever before he left Liberia, and it's recorded as just a little over 97 degrees Fahrenheit. So he was subnormal.
Mm-hmm. So the logical response, it would seem to me, and bearing in mind I'm no expert, but it seems that the logical response is this is too depressing, I'm leaving.
I don't like it when they talk about the Templars.
Out of here. That the logical response would be to cut off travel from the nations where the disease is running rampant.
Well, it does seem logical, doesn't it?
But it seems that for whatever reason, it was determined that...
We're told that it would make it worse because of commerce for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was an interesting story today, which, I don't want to spend too much time on because I don't want to make it. There's a temptation in looking at the story to make light of a grim situation. But Cote d'Ivoire, or the Ivory Coast, which is next door to Guinea and Liberia, two of the nations hard hit by the disease, have closed their borders wisely.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently that affects the supply of workers needed to harvest the cocoa beans needed to produce chocolate, and that the chocolate industry is banding together to finance a relief effort for that part of the world to try to alleviate the situation. So,
well, that makes sense. You know, another area in Liberia that actually has pretty much, erased Ebola from within that small compound is the rubber tree plantation run by Firestone. That is one of the primary employers of that area. Rubber trees are everywhere in that part of the world, in that part of Africa. And long ago, Firestone, I think it was like World War I, they went over there pretty early and they set up their plantation over there, and they have so they can make tires and all sorts of other things. Latex, I think, is derived from rubber. And latex gloves, of course, are one of the primary barriers between healthcare workers and Ebola. They very early quarantined. They did, they had suits flown in and everything, and they were spending a lot of money to keep their workers going and healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not just going to be a health issue. It will be an economic issue. And if the growth curve, and I've seen a chart now on the reported deaths, and we're looking at a growth curve that is trending
toward the hockey stick.
Yeah.
Toward exponential.
Exactly. And we haven't talked about it on PID Radio because Sharon's been hard at work on this really since our last program. And is
that's true. This is the first PID Radio where we've really discussed this.
Yeah. Sharon has a new book that is, she's turned in the manuscript
first draft,
now
and
is now in the editing process, but should be released in November by Defender Publishing, which is Tom Horn's publishing company.
Probably mid-November.
Yeah. Ebola and the Fourth Horseman of the Apocalypse.
It's based on a presentation that I gave in Colorado this past July at the Pikes Peak Summit there with PITN. It gets into the original language in Revelation 6 and some of the implications there as far as morphology and some of the original language. I won't go into more than that because I don't want to give it away. I mean, this is Tom Horn. He's been kind enough to say he would publish this. It was really near and dear to my heart as far as I really believe the Lord was telling me I needed to write this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's the definitive work on Ebola in any way, shape, or form. But if you are interested in Bible prophecy and you want to see how this may in some way work into God's timeline, I pray I'm correct in everything that I put in there. I did my best. I prayed a lot while I wrote it. It was a very depressing book to write.
No doubt. And the presentation, that is something that you will likely give again at the Quest for Truth virtual conference coming up November 8th and 9th. We don't know the schedule yet as to when you and I will be giving our presentations, but either the evening of Saturday the 8th, the conference will run. And it's a virtual conference, so no travel involved on your part. You log in. And you can watch the videos, watch the presentations in real time.
Exactly. You don't attend in person.
Right.
You actually watch it. We're going to be giving our presentations virtually.
Mm-hmm.
We're not holograms or anything cool like that.
No.
But we will be Skyping in.
And that will be Saturday, November 8th, between 6 p.m. Central and 11 p.m. Central time, which I think by
that's
then
that's probably going to be you.
We'll be on, because that'll be late in the evening. And that'll be
I turn into a pumpkin at about 8
standard
o'clock.
Time by then. So
I think November 2nd or 3rd.
Right, November 2nd. So GMT minus 6 at that point. So anyway, 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Central Time, and then all day on Sunday, November 9th, running from 8 a.m. Central Time. Now, of course, we'll be doing the Gilbert House Fellowship in the morning, so we won't join until after lunch. But then it will run until 11 p.m. Central Time on Sunday, November 9th. And again, Sharon's presentation on Thanatos and Therion, the little beast of Revelation 6, will be part of that. So,
yes. And you're going to be doing the Facebook thing or
Dominion Theology.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's the one that I feel really led to deliver.
I agree with you. I think, you and I are trying to write a manuscript that now has been pushed back a little bit for, again, Defender Publishing, but it's going to be on transhumanism.
Mm-hmm.
We're about halfway through that manuscript. We were about halfway through when I realized that Ebola was something I felt compelled to write. So that got done very quickly. Tom Horn said, yes, run with it. How quickly can you have it to me?
Exactly. So I'll be talking about Dominion Theology and how Christians may be fooled into welcoming the Antichrist with open arms through an overemphasis on God and country, but not necessarily in that order.
Yeah, that's disturbing because that's something that, honestly, I still struggle with. I mean, I was raised with that. I've said it many times on our program before, seeing the Christian flag and the U.S. flag equated up on the altar.
Exactly.
And I still see it in a lot of churches. And that's a programming, visual.
Right. And I suspect that there would be more people in many of our churches, good people who believe in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, who yet have a real difficult time separating God from the United States of America. And the fact is that we are Christians. As Christians, our citizenship is in the kingdom of God first, which does not know any national boundaries. And boy, that's difficult. That is
it
hard.
Is.
I might want to close that door back.
Let her know. Hold on.
So those will be the two presentations we'll be giving. Other good speakers, excellent speakers at the Quest for Truth virtual conference include Doug Hamp and Rob Skiba, the two men behind Quest for Truth, of course. Doc Marquis, John McTernan, who has an excellent ministry and wrote a book somewhat controversial, but he ties together some points that are really, if they're coincidental, there's much of a coincidence theorist. Well, I just got my finger on the volume button over here.
Oh, good.
John McTernan, who wrote a book, As We Have Done to Israel, basically showing how the United States has treated Israel has been reflected in things that have affected the United States. And also Daniel Duvall and Freeman Fly will be the other speakers at this virtual conference. More information, well, we've got links at PIDradio.com.
And they will be in the show notes for the show.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention, since you were speaking about how the United States treats Israel, the U.S. Supreme Court is about to make a decision as to whether or not a gentleman who has listed his passport birthplace as Jerusalem, whether or not his U.S. passport can say he is legally from Jerusalem, Israel, because we're not sure that we want to say that Israel is actually a recognized country. And that Jerusalem is technically
a
recognized sovereign nation with Jerusalem as the capital.
Oh, okay.
I think that's essentially what this U.S. Supreme Court decision may imply. If they say, yes, he can put that down, Jerusalem, I'm from Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. However, it says it on what am I trying to say? I think my blood sugar is dropping, even though I just don't feel like I'm quite in the moment. I apologize for that. His travel document, his
passport.
Thank you very much. I kept wanting to say visa, and I knew that was wrong.
Sorry, I was trying to do some research on the fly here because that triggered something else that is going on in the news that we probably ought to mention, which is that there's a growing trend around the world. It seems like, you know, the snowball rolling down the hill that's gathering speed as it goes. More and more nations beginning to recognize Palestine as a sovereign state.
Yes.
The UK is getting ready to vote on that issue. And there are other nations in the EU that have already done so.
Well, I would say since they now hold observer status at the UN, that it's very likely that that's just around the corner where the UN says, okay, you're a full member.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Let's see. Who are the most recent nations to recognize Palestine? Haiti, Guatemala, Thailand, Iceland in 2011. But there seems to be a growing recognition among some of the larger nations in the EU. And unfortunately, not having pulled this up and have this in front of me, I won't speak to this with any authority, so I won't speak to it. But the UK is preparing to Sweden. That's what I was trying. I couldn't remember if it was Sweden or Belgium, but Sweden this past week recognized Palestine as a sovereign nation.
Oh.
So, one of my lands of ancestry. Sweden became
Gilberg.
The first. Yeah, it was.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
That's what they claim.
First major European nation to officially recognize the state of Palestine, and the British Parliament is set to vote on a motion asking the UK government to do the same, according to the media reports. However, this would be a non-binding motion. But it does have the backing of the opposition Labour Party MPs. So we'll see.
Well, speaking of the UK, there was a story at the Daily Mail this afternoon that says that 20,000 students are due back primarily from Nigeria to start their terms in the UK. 20,000 students from Ebola-stricken countries.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens when they all land.
The UK, England, is really not the country that it was once before. I mean,
I jokingly have said, well, only half jokingly said that we'd love to move over there. And I would. I would love to at least visit for a long time mm-hmm. in Scotland and in Wales and yes. parts of England. But I'm not so sure I want to be governed by them. But I'm not so sure the United States is any better in some ways. We're fast tracking after England.
Yes, we are. And it's not all just illegal immigration. When we reformed immigration regulations in the United States in 1967, we essentially transformed the nature of the country. We are importing a lot of people. And I hate to say sound it like this because I recognize that for somebody who doesn't know me, I sound like a racist when I start talking this way. But just looking at history, when you bring a bunch of people into a nation who have no historic ties to the culture, and culture is a very broad term, not just the kind of food you like or music you listen to, but the legal traditions of a particular culture. I mean, much of what the United States is today comes from English common law mm-hmm. and so-called natural law.
But we're in the process of changing.
We're in the process of changing, and in large part because we're bringing people into the United States who have no grounding or ties to the history, which is predominantly, frankly, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
Yes, I know that, but we have been in the process of changing for 150 years. We started out as white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
Right, right.
We have been moving away from that
snowball
for a long time.
Down the hill.
It was kind of slow for a long time, and now it's really picking up
speed.
Since
the 1960s, when we started, mm-hmm. We basically kicked the doors open and said, come on in.
Yeah, but this is simply a prelude to a war, to a world, I mean, that has no borders.
Right, and there are some reasons for that. The elites in particular want it that way.
And I think that we're shown in prophecy that that is how it will be. Therefore, mm-hmm. it's not going to come out of thin air. Mm-hmm. It will be in the process. And probably there are treaties behind the scenes that you and I are unaware of that can very quickly go into effect when an event such as the rapture occurs.
Mm-hmm.
May I speak to one of
yes.
those?
Yes, please.
One that I was unaware of is, let me go back to my other page here. The International Health Regulations of 2005. 196 countries across the globe agreed to implement the International Health Regulations of 2005, which essentially puts power in the hands of the World Health Organization
right.
in the case of a pandemic
mm-hmm.
or even an epidemic.
It's
That's
for your
why
own good.
WHO is in charge in Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are... I'm not sure how well they would enforce this, but there are some stories that have been over the last week or so about the screenings at airports now, mm-hmm. People coming in from nations where Ebola is prevalent, that if people won't submit to the screenings at the airport, just allowing them to take your temperature, they can forcibly require it. Yes.
They can also
quarantine you for up to 3 weeks.
Quarantine you, yes. And if things get bad enough, they have they being WHO, mm-hmm. have the discretion to require that you receive a vaccine.
Right. Story today out of Canada that the Canadian, I'm trying to pull this up on the fly, Canadian health researchers, and this was a department of the government, have developed an experimental vaccine that they are trying to get approval to donate to the World Health Organization. They are to ship it to Geneva for testing next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I saw, it seems like that one may be a monoclonal antibody. I'd have to go and look.
The thing about the spread of this disease, getting back to what I said earlier about common sense, indicating that we would basically shut our borders to anyone coming from one of those countries or anyone who's been in one of those countries within the yeah. last 21 days, which of course didn't happen. And in fact, we see that even the World Health Organization worker who came into the country and said, yeah, I've just been in Nigeria for the last month, was just, oh, okay, come on in. It makes me wonder if this crisis is not deliberate. it may be, you know, like the old saying, you never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah.
Obamacare was, and still is, hugely unpopular. But what if we start seeing the meme over the next week or so that, you know, this is the reason we need single-payer health care. We need everybody in the system, as it were, so that we know who's been vaccinated and who hasn't.
Yes, yes. I think that's very, very possible. I also wonder about the timing, because right now in the United States, we have a pretty new Surgeon General who is nowhere to be seen. She's absolutely quiet. Also, we have a candidate, an appointee candidate for Health and Human Services that is yet to get through the House because of his stance on gun control. Mm. So right now, we really don't have someone taking point on this other than Tom Frieden from the CDC. Mm-hmm. But there is an organization, back to that 2005 signatory event, the International Health Regulations. They required, that document required that every country who signed had to come up with their own local plan for their countries within 5 years. They could get a two-year extension if they asked for it. Well, the United States came up with theirs. It's called the Global Emerging Infection Surveillance and Response System, the GEIS. Mm-hmm. That technically is in control here in the United States. And yet I've gone to their website and not really seen much about it, about Ebola. But technically that should be the organization taking the lead underneath the aegis of WHO.
Hmm. And again, if WHO is running the show here, then...
Who's on first?
Yeah, they get to tell the CDC what they're supposed to do, and supposedly... The United States government has agreed to conform or abide by those guidelines.
When
and
they signed,
those
yes, they did.
Okay.
Yes, they did. And I'm. It's really sad that it gets down to the old joke of who's on first. I don't know who's on second.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I don't know. It's third base.
Oh, sorry. Well, who's on second? Yes.
No, what's on second?
Oh, what's
it?
That's right. Well, maybe Geis is what.
By the way, as we record this on the afternoon of October 12, 2014, a report from Boston, a clinic there has quarantined a patient outside the building because of his recent travel to West Africa and is complaining of Ebola-like symptoms. And the whole clinic has been quarantined. The fire department in Braintree, Massachusetts, quoted as saying, no one is leaving the building.
I think that happened earlier this morning. I remember seeing Braintree as a story this morning.
Reported 2 hours ago, yeah.
Yeah, that is how it should have played out in Dallas. Mm-hmm. The minute someone came in having said, I just arrived here from West Africa, mm-hmm. and I have a fever and I have other symptoms, the entire ER should have been shut down.
Yeah. There is apparently a $1 million prize now being offered by the United States government to find a better anti-Ebola contamination suit. This is being done, it's basically crowdsourcing. We're trying to crowdsource the fight against Ebola. USAID, U.S. Mm-hmm. Agency for International Development.
They're always in there on these things.
Yeah, because they need to get into these foreign countries, because that's the CIA. The White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, Centers for Disease Control, and U.S. Department of Defense are challenging innovators to construct a better contamination suit, a prize of $1 million. One of the problems facing healthcare workers when they go to Liberia or Cote d'Ivoire, well, not Cote d'Ivoire, but Guinea or Sierra Leone, is that it is hot, it is humid, and wearing a big rubber suit is not something you can do for more than a couple hours.
It's very uncomfortable, and it's unwieldy. I mean, you have to do things very carefully with your hands, and it's very difficult when you're double-gloved.
I mean, uncomfortable is not the word. I mean, on a humid day when it's 80 degrees here in central Illinois, I go out and cut the grass for an hour or two, and I'm about ready to puke.
And add to that every time you exit a ward, you
yes.
are doused with a spray of bleach solution.
Exactly. So it's difficult. Physically difficult for healthcare workers.
And I so am in support of every person who has volunteered to go over there. Also of our military men and women who have gone over there. The
yeah.
first wave has already arrived in West Africa, and they are there, we're told, to help build hospital units so that because there just aren't enough beds, hospitals are full. Mm-hmm. They're turning patients away every day, every minute practically. And that means that people are in the streets dying. They're back at home dying. It needs to be better controlled than this. Monrovia in Liberia actually quarantined an entire area. Mm-hmm. And apparently that has helped to slow the pace of infection.
Yeah. Well, again, the healthcare worker in Dallas, Texas, we are told, breached protocol.
Yes.
And that's why she was infected.
That's the same thing we were told about the nurse in Spain. She
yep.
breached protocol.
Right.
I think that's pretty much what we have to be told.
Mm-hmm.
Because if every rule, every action, every practiced movement was followed to the letter, and those ladies still got infected,
right,
then there's a problem.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because then they have to admit, oh, well, yeah, what we've been telling you about it not being airborne, we lied.
If I had Ebola and I sneeze into your face,
mm-hmm.
I am sending Ebola particles your way. Virus
right.
can go into your eyes, into your nose,
yeah.
into your mouth. It will go on surfaces. And we're now told now it can live up to 3 days on a surface.
Oh, okay. That's
so if you don't clean down those surfaces very mm-hmm. quickly. Yeah, I was originally told or read and it was only 20 minutes. No, mm-hmm. studies are now showing it is as much as 3 days.
Well, when we come back to the book by Richard Preston, The Hot Zone, written, 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
More than 15 years
yeah.
ago, 1997, about the study being done with monkeys in Reston, Virginia,
mm-hmm.
where it was discovered that monkeys in separate rooms, the only connection being the air system.
Yeah, that was different than being sneezed upon directly.
Right.
This was truly airborne, so the particles were literally traveling with the flow of air.
Mm-hmm. But the sense that we got from the news stories was that you had to physically touch somebody's blood, sweat, whatever, and nobody thought, sneezing, when you're sneezing out, you're sneezing droplets of
yeah.
fluid as
yeah.
well. So yeah.
Yeah, I've
– or cough.
Well, in my book, I cite links to several very recent – we're talking 2013 – very recent studies that indicate that Ebola Zaire is airborne.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, just pray, because this, pestilence is one of the things we were told for, to look for as signs of that the end is nearing.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. And the biggest thing, and this is, I say this a number of times in the book, don't fear.
Yeah.
Really place your faith in Jesus Christ and his covering power. You know, we see in Exodus that at the time that Moses was going to Pharaoh and asking again and again, pleading for his people to leave, there were plague after plague after plague after plague. And mm-hmm. one of those, sadly, was the firstborn child, and even the firstborn of the animals were all killed,
mm-hmm.
except for those houses in the Hebrew segment of the city where they had the blood on the lintels.
Mm-hmm. And as difficult as it is to maintain a sense of history, because all of us are in the moment and we're most familiar with what's around us at any given time. I had in talking with Mike Heiser a couple of weeks ago, I started off on a rabbit trail about World War I, and you've done some research about the Spanish flu of World War I. But we look back at other plagues, the Athens plague of.
Mm-hmm.
I
mentioned that in my book.
In your mm-hmm. book, and of course the bubonic plague, the Black Death of the Middle Ages in Europe. There have been other plagues that have killed
typhoid,
far more people.
Yellow fever. I mean, early 20th century, there were quite a number of
right.
very deadly viruses. Smallpox
yes.
is something that we are told has been totally eradicated, but prove to me that it can't be released again. Mm-hmm. I mean, it still exists in freezers.
Well, yeah. We got researchers who are, tinkering with DNA to try to recreate the Spanish flu virus. A researcher at the University of Wisconsin did that a couple of years ago.
He didn't have anything else to do.
I guess. It must have been a slow day. But so while 4,000 dead is a substantial number and the lethality of this virus is very alarming, there have been cases in the past where, again, when the Spanish flu of 1918-1919 was running rampant, 50 million people died.
It was between 2 and 5%.
Yes, and the lethality was between 2 and 5%. And that was in a world where there were considerably fewer than the
exactly.
What are we
so
at
if 50 million died, I mean, imagine the number of people who were infected by that.
Yeah.
If the lethality of H1N1 had that time, the Spanish flu, had been as lethal as Ebola is, Ebola on the average is 50% lethal.
Mm-hmm. So there have been times in the past when it's been when it has been worse. And I was just in some of the reading and some of the listening that I do to podcasts. I'm kind of a history nerd and enjoy listening to stories about history. And I'll recommend again the Hardcore History podcast by Dan Carlin, Carlin, who's doing a series now called Road to Armageddon, which is about World War I. And the Spanish flu is almost an afterthought. He really not even talked about it in the podcast. I just sort of added that on my own, in my own head. Like, and on top of all of this, this charnel house that Europe became between 1914 and 1916, just a few years later, then you had the Spanish flu coming along and mopping up the survivors. They were dealing with outmoded 19th century tactics using 20th century weaponry. The machine gun had been invented. The tank had been invented. Aircraft had been invented. You also had gas being used, poison gas, in large quantities for the first time. And yet you still had generals who believed that the only way to defeat the enemy was to march straight at them and dislodge them. So, that was a tactic that might have worked back in the day when the enemy was shooting at you with a blunderbuss. But when they've got a machine gun, there were 50, 60,000 who were dying in a single day of a battle that would rage for months and months and months. I just find it hard to believe. I mean, here we are looking at the news items today and seeing stories of, a few hundred dying in a car bomb attack and thinking, oh, the horror. Well, it is the horror, but 100 years ago.
Yeah.
100 years ago. And then on top of that, the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
And I've mentioned these before, the letters of my grandfather to my great-grandmother. I am feeling fine and in the best of health, your loving son. What must they have thought the world was coming to in 1918, 1919? They must have thought it was the end of the world.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. Well, the tactics have changed a lot since then.
Yeah.
We now have not only unmanned aerial vehicles and drones patrolling the skies, we also have cyber warfare, which takes me to another story that was in the news just the last couple of days. Apparently, the UK and the US have decided to do a war game based around the idea that a major bank, either in the US or in Great Britain, suddenly fails. Whether or not it's cyber hacked, and the reason I make that connection, I don't know if that's what the war game is about or if it's about just bad investments or the market tanking. But Russia has been quoted, someone from Russia, a source saying that someone in Russia plans on hacking a major bank and, some rogue outfit. There's always rogues out there that's planning on hacking a major entity, probably a bank, and doing a big heist, not just stealing a little bit. Not just stealing, account numbers or anything like that, making a major heist. So I don't know if that's why they're planning on looking at the failure of a major bank or not, but I think that something along the lines of Lehman Brothers is about to happen again.
Could very well. And we keep seeing stories in the news. In fact, another story I mentioned to you earlier today, Kmart. Has been hacked.
Yeah, hacked again, yeah.
So people who shopped at Kmart with a credit card have had their passwords possibly exposed. I know I had to have my card replaced, probably from the hack attack at Home Depot.
Yeah.
And there are others that have taken place here in recent months. And interestingly, earlier this week, the United States Army announced that it's accepting applications from regular Army officers in the ranks of second lieutenant through colonel who want to become members of the service's new career branch for cyber warriors. So the Army is trying to recruit to draw people into its new cyber division. They've got I presume this is the official patch because I'm looking at the story at armytimes.com, a story published October 8th. The patch is a Pentagon U.S. Army Cyber Command, and it shows three spears superimposed over the globe of planet Earth. Now, why spears? I mean, that's about as low-tech and analog as you can get as a weapon.
That's interesting.
Yeah, three spears.
I'll have to think about that.
Analog.
Well, there was a story this morning that I read to you, that story about the restaurant in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy appears out of the sewer, out of a grate, tosses a smoke bomb into a restaurant. He has an American, I Love America or something like that, T-shirt on, American flag, disappears back into the sewers and is gone. The police have no idea who it was, what happened.
That's odd.
Smoke bomb could have been a biological weapon. Mm-hmm. It could have been a real bomb.
Some sort of a poison gas.
Yes.
I mean, we remember that the Aum Shariko attacks in Japan a while back with ricin. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. The only reason they failed is because they didn't have enough ricin.
Uh-huh. And they still managed to kill quite a number of people.
Yeah. So what's going on? And why America? I mean, there was a point made about it. The guy had on an American T-shirt.
Angry white man.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it gets back to the point about the change in America over the last 50 years with the change in our immigration policies.
Yeah.
There are a number of men and women who are angry about the changes in America. This is not the America that we were taught it was when we were growing up.
Exactly.
It is changing. I think we're going to have to deal with it. Because
I think every generation has had to deal with it.
Well, yeah. But we're finding out that, and I'm not talking about ethnically not the same America anymore. I'm talking about the fact that the Constitution seems to be there as window dressing now.
Yeah.
We talked many times on this program and on A View from the Bunker about what's the word I'm looking for? Not Fourth Amendment search and seizure, but I'm thinking about the writ of habeas corpus.
Oh, that's gone.
Yeah, habeas corpus was not even part of the Bill of Rights. That was in the Constitution, the body of the Constitution itself, and that is now seems to be
that's
optional.
Been corpuside.
Yeah, because of the war on terror, you know, don't you know? But beyond that, as a little known aspect of the war on terror, stories that were published this week in the Washington Post, which is interesting because they don't normally go in for conspiracy theory type stuff. And the CBC, which is the Canadian equivalent of the BBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, warning people who travel on the highways of America not to carry a lot of money around because local law enforcement agencies being guided by independent consulting agencies who are showing these local law enforcement agencies how to do this, are stopping people on, you know, perhaps for real reasons. Perhaps you're speeding. Perhaps you've got a headlight out. Perhaps your windows
look like you were texting or you don't have your seatbelt on.
Windows are tinted too darkly, whatever. But while you're stopped, they come up with a pretext, a reason to search your car. Maybe they can see something and they actually have a reason, probable cause, you know, from something they can see in the car. Or perhaps it's just some intimidation. Look, let me search your car. If I don't find anything, this ticket goes away. Just let me search your car. And if they find money, they confiscate it because they have the right to do so apparently under some rules passed as part of or subsequent to the Patriot Act. And they get to keep it. And you have to go to court to try to get it back. But to get it back, you have to prove where you got that money from and that you weren't planning to do anything nefarious with it. This is, again, this is another example of how since 2001, the post 9/11 world, you are no longer innocent until proven guilty in the United States.
You've got that right. It's not just the United States. Apparently, the Brian Schmidt, who won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 2011 as he was traveling, he had his 24-karat gold medal with him, and the TSA asked him, sir, where did you get and who gave you this 24-karat gold medal? Because it cannot possibly be yours. His reply was, the king is feeding.
Yeah, I'm sure that went over real well with the TSA.
Oh, goodness.
A Nobel Prize winner. But there are some real, there's some really heartbreaking stories here. There was one story in the article at the Washington Post, which was then cited by the author of the article at the CBC, which was intended to warn. And by the way, mentioned that the Canadian government doesn't really come right out and say don't travel with money in the U.S., but it just advises that because of the difficulty in banking in a foreign country, you may prefer to travel without, you know, a great deal of cash on you.
Yeah.
But of course, the subtext there is because there are police agencies in the United States that may stop you for some reason and then take it and then keep it. And apparently, according to the Washington Post, only one in six will try to fight and get their money back. But of course, if you get your money back, you've got to, you know, you get your money back less the legal fees you had to lay out in order to pursue the government in court. This has raised over the last 10 years, something like $2.5 billion that the government has confiscated. And here's the thing. They confiscate the money and don't charge you with a crime. I mean, I'm astounded. Now, you and I are both pro-police. We have family members who are members of the police forces in various parts of the country, here in Illinois, Indiana. But how can they do this?
And yet, we get a story from, back in 2006 or 7, the gentleman from Texas who were traveling to Michigan to sell a carload of...
Young Muslim men who were traveling to...
Walmart cell phones. Yeah. Oh, no, we're just trying to raise some money for college. Oh, okay. Go on, Mr. Goofy.
Yeah. So nothing to see here, so just move along. But some bad stories, like a kid who was traveling from Michigan to California for a job interview right out of college, and his father had given him $2,500 in cash to pay for the trip, expenses, hotel accommodations, and so forth. So this kid could drive across country and interview for the job.
Yeah.
Stopped in Nevada by a police officer. Officer said, "I think you're traveling to California to buy drugs." From Michigan with $2,500? Like, they don't have drugs in Detroit?
It's nuts. It is. Well, I also, before we finish up, I have no idea how long we've been talking, but
45 minutes.
I just want to mention again that we are still seeing an outbreak here in the United States of enterovirus D68, EVD68. It is apparently pretty communicable. And only certain children, oftentimes if they have asthma or other respiratory problems, immunodeficient, if they're, a cancer patient or something like that, it can be life-threatening. We had another child just this morning who was reported dead. But it does, if the child survives, oftentimes there is some sort of paralysis. So this is a polio-like virus. It's a scary, scary virus. If I had children, if we had young children right now, I would be probably hosing down that child practically every time they came home. Mm-hmm. You know, practice the rules. Remember, you don't touch kids' hands. You don't touch anything in the bathroom. I'll just go with you and sterilize everything in advance.
Yeah. This is a world that is standing on its head, which is, by the way, why I'm sure the Prophecy Forum guys have titled their conference coming up November 14th and 15th, A World Turned Upside Down.
Wow, yeah.
Another example of this story is one that came out just, when did this come out? This came out just Thursday this week. National Review posted a story about some training information given to middle school teachers in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Yeah, about gender expressions. Now, middle school, we're talking fifth and sixth grade, basically.
Yeah.
And teachers have been advised to avoid gender-exclusive expressions such as ladies and gentlemen or boys and girls, but instead to use phrases like purple penguins.
That's just stupid. I just say that is just stupid?
Now, this is Lincoln, Nebraska. You used to live in Lincoln, Nebraska.
I know, but let me tell you, when I lived in Lincoln, Nebraska, at the time, there were more practicing gays per capita, believe it or not, in Lincoln, Nebraska than anywhere else in the country.
That seems...
I know. So it's a very liberal town.
Yeah.
A town where many of the people who live there, go to school there, really would like to see laws changed. Again, I'm going to repeat this. I've said it before. If you choose to be homosexual, that's your business.
Yeah.
You get free will in this life. You can choose to do whatever you want to do so long as what you do does not harm another individual.
Exactly.
If you choose to harm another individual, then I'm going to have to come up to you and I'm going to say, that is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to choose that. Saying to a room full of kids, you are gender neutral, is harmful.
5-year-olds know that there's a difference between boys and girls.
Yes, they do. And they oftentimes prove it by, I'll show you yours if and mine if you show me yours.
Well, I can say that I've never experienced that, at least.
Well, neither did I, but I keep reading about that.
But it's demonstrated in other ways, which, you know, playground fights, competitiveness in sports.
Yes.
You know, it's just another way of, you know, seeing whose is bigger. You know?
Yes, it is.
And boys are more likely to engage in that type of behavior than women.
Let me tell you the other thing. At that age, boys are very, very impressionable, and they're feeling inadequate anyway, because oftentimes the girls are starting to get taller than they are.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's so harmful to say, you're all the same.
Yeah.
You're all the same sex. I'm just going to say you're purple penguins.
And, you know, according to this, and now this is not a directive that was handed down from the school board. This was, you know, materials handed out by a group to the school district, the middle school teachers in Lincoln, Nebraska, by a group, and let me get the name correct here, called Gender Spectrum, which is an organization that, quote, provides education, training, and support to help create a gender-sensitive and inclusive environment for children of all ages, end quote. Teachers in this information packet were advised that if they found it necessary to mention that genders exist at all, they should use the term boy, girl, both, or neither. Yeah. Now, again, it's easier for us to sit back here and say, boy, this is just crazy and progressives are just off their rocker. But and we talked about this morning on the Gilbert House Fellowship. And I'll refer back again to the interview that I did with Gans Shimura of Face Like the Sun, Canary Cry Radio.
Yeah.
And Patricia Langer then followed up with this. In fact, that's what prompted her to contact us originally, was the interview with Gans. The occult realm, at least certain strains of belief within the realm of the occult, believe, and Gnostics in particular, that mankind's original state was androgynous. We were neither male nor female, and that somehow in the process of the creation, and I may not have this exactly correct, but the general outline is correct. Somehow in the process of creation, our personalities, our beings
were split. And the whole goal is to reunite them.
Reunite, right. So the goal is to become androgynous once again. And the transhumanist movement, this is where Gans came up with this. He found a strain of androgyny, pro-androgyny within the transhumanist movement to eliminate genders or to create a gender spectrum. You can be whatever you want to be, male, female, both, neither. And again, to people who are grounded in the Word of God, or people who are just conservative and just raised, oh, hey, look, boys are boys, girls are girls. There's a difference between men and women.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
It is an observable difference. There's a genetic difference. There's a physiological difference. We are not the same. Men are created to be better at certain tasks than women, and vice versa. And this movement to try to eliminate this is not just inclusiveness gone wild, but it is part of a spiritual agenda to push us away from the Genesis account, which tells us in the beginning he created them male and female.
Amen. Amen. Well, as we get into end time goals, one story that we'll probably have to end with this because we're getting close, I think. Pedophilia deserves civil rights, says New York Times op-ed.
Really?
The nation's tough anti-pedophilia laws are unfair to pedophiles, according to the op-ed published by the New York Times editors. One can live with pedophilia and not act on it, says Margot Kaplan, an entrepreneurial assistant law professor at Rutgers University. He's trying to make a legal career in the regulation of expanding sexual diversity instead of routine and lower status practice areas, such as tort law, etc. He says criminal law should be changed so that pedophiles are only stigmatized or denied jobs if law school graduates agree that they pose a direct threat to children. Oh, good grief. He really wants to see some sort of law change. It would be a sea change. And yeah. I wonder if he belongs to the Man Boy Love Association.
Well, the person who wrote this piece, which is called Pedophilia, a Disorder, Not a Crime, is Margot Kaplan, who is an assistant professor at Rutgers School of Law.
Well, Margot would be a female, wouldn't she?
Well, you'd assume so. Who knows in this world?
Well, you know, and define pedophilia. I mean, you see, I can't go to a newspaper online anymore without seeing at least one, if not half a dozen stories about teachers who have had sexual relations with their students.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's
that's technically pedophilia.
And it's, and here's the thing that's really disturbing is it, because many of the stories, most of the stories that I've noticed anyway are adult women with
boys. That's why I went to that.
Yes.
If this Margot is indeed a female. Traditionally, that is a woman's name.
She is, yes. According to the website at Rutgers, I've looked her up in the Rutgers School of Law. It's interesting because the reaction of people hearing about a 25-year-old school teacher and a 15-year-old or 13-year-old boy is different than if it were a 25-year-old man and a 13-year-old girl. Is it not?
That's true. That's
is it
true.
Not?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, there are a lot of men out there who think, hey, all right, woo, and that it shouldn't be that way.
No, it shouldn't.
But sadly, that's the way that, and again, it gets back to the whole, you know, yeah, difference between men, women. There is a difference between the sexes, regardless
yes.
of what the progressive or the occultists would like us to believe.
Wow.
But you're right. That is a growing problem in this world. And, you know, I think those stories are just something we need to remember and bring up whenever you hear somebody that homeschooling is harmful to children. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
oh,
mm-hmm,
really?
Mm-hmm. We're also seeing more and more, and we talked about this morning on the Gilbert House Fellowship, that we see way too many stories about parents who are killing their kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Stabbing
yes.
them to death. And that was another one that we saw this week was, and it was, the headline was, Pastor's Wife. Dresses children in white and then stabs them to death so they can meet God.
Yeah, there's a sad...
sacrifices.
Yeah.
The enemy
blood
is
sacrifices.
Trying to get blood sacrifices going
yes.
on. And that's something I get into with my Ebola book, is that Ebola is one of those diseases that in particular sheds a lot of blood.
It certainly does. And as the Lord said many times in Scripture, the blood is the life, and that there will be a reckoning for the shedding of human blood, even when an animal sheds human blood, a reckoning.
Did you
and
know that
also,
the Hebrew word for blood actually means silent?
Hmm.
This is a silent witness to God. It speaks volumes.
That is, yeah. And when he told Cain, your brother's blood cries to me from the ground.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, the Gilbert House Fellowship next Sunday morning, 10:30 a.m. Central Time in the U.S. If you're overseas, until we get past daylight savings time here, that is GMT minus 5, so we hope you can join us live. But it's also podcast, so you can sign up and download the audio versions. We do stream it live so that we can show...
I think we're done. Sam just appeared at the door.
So that's at gilberthouse.org. And this week on A View from the Bunker, guest is James Fox, a young man who spent several years intensely studying Eastern mysticism, specifically yoga, and is now disturbed by what he sees, now that he's come to Christ, by what he sees as Eastern mysticism working its way into our churches.
Yes, he's right.
Yeah, so that is at vftb.net. Should be uploaded by later this evening, which again, October 12th of 2014.
Okay.
Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone.